Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hello and welcome to Streets Ahead, your podcast dedicated to all things cycling, walking and wheeling in the UK and beyond. I'm Ned Bolting.
I'm Adam Tranter.
And I'm Laura Laker.
And this time we are e-scootering around the world. Well, not really. Believe it or not, it's a year since we visited the topic and the UK is now 15 months into its 12-month e-scooter trials, now extended to March 2022. Now, globally, these tiny wheeled and not-so-tiny wheeled vehicles are taking off, but concerns over pavement riding and pedestrian safety still dominate the debate. So, Adam, you've been kind of deployed today as our special correspondent, haven't you? Literally across the world.
Yeah, I was at Velocity in Lisbon, which is a kind of annual conference for active travel. And I used the opportunity to have a go on Super Pedestrian's Link scooters. Super Pedestrian are sponsoring this episode, our first ever sponsor. And we are going to have a listen to my little escapade, really, and see what I thought to e-scooters in a fairly mature market, actually, because it's the UK. You can just say, it's new. You know, or whatever, but in Lisbon, they're kind of, you know, they've had them a good few years now, and they're just sort of just getting on with it. So yeah. Here's that little clip. Hello, from Lisbon. I'm just leaving the apartment I'm staying in. It's part of the Velocity conference. And in a step away from bikes, bicycles, all things cycles, I'm going to try an e-scooter. Now, I've been on e-scooters a couple of times. But thanks to our sponsor, Super Pedestrian, who are operating the Link scheme here in Lisbon. I'm going to go and try one out and see what I think. Now, this is designed to be way more than e-scooters are fun, because I think we've passed that. I think we know that e-scooters are pretty fun. This is more about being a city that has accepted e-scooters. They've been here for several years now. There are several suppliers, brands, sort of vying for people's attention. And as we've seen in London and other cities in the UK with e-scooter trials, it's not without its problems. I think there's no point hiding from that. There's no point also throwing the baby out with the bathwater and saying, well, e-scooters are bad because of these isolated incidents. But so a couple of years on, it's clear they're being used. How are they dealing with some of the problems that there are, and have any of those problems found themselves solutions just yet? Straight away, I've not had to walk far. Looked on the app. Literally, there's a sort of crossroads. Well, it's not really a crossroads, actually, is it? It is a crossroads, but it's sort of diagonal. You don't need to know this. And there's a scooter. There's three scooters. We're not in any sort of busy area. I'm just based in the north of the city at the moment. It's sort of still very much in Lisbon, but it's a little bit quieter, a little bit less to do, a little bit less touristy. And yeah, there are scooters. I'm just watching. There's a group of four people walking down the pavement, down the hill, down the steep hills of Lisbon, and there is actually a Link scooter parked on the pavement. So they've had to sort of walk around. It's nothing dramatic. And there is enough space for them, but it's certainly, you know, not perfect. But I should, well, I should also point out that there are some problems to try and solve in Lisbon, because you just heard the motorbike go there. The traffic is fairly busy, fairly horrific at times. And I've found the car driving to be some of the most aggressive that I've experienced. We have the 30-kilometre zones here, but rarely are they followed. And there is a kind of constant sort of underlying aggression on the roads here. They need to do something about it, and they acknowledge that e-scooters could be the solution. And to be fair, I've just called out a scooter for being parked on the pavement. Someone's left it there. But at the same time, someone has just left their car idling in the middle of the roundabout to go and get a coffee. So that's you know, something that maybe we're just so used to seeing right now that we just pass by and don't think anything of it. There's lots of parking over zebra crossings here. When I came last night, late at night, there were two cars just parked in the middle of the crossroads overnight, just sort of left there. So we have to put it into context of the wider problems. It's easy to call out e-scooters because they're new and scary, but they are really, in reality, probably, all things considered, part of a solution. People seem to be using them. People seem to like them. So, excuse me, do you speak English?
Yes.
Do you fancy... I just wanted to talk to you about the scooter. Is that okay?
Yeah.
Oh, what's your name?
Swayze.
Swayze. Yeah. Nice to meet you, Swayze. You've just ridden the scooter, parked it nicely, you're way out the way and stuff. How often do you use these things?
How often?
How often, yes. How frequently?
Mostly every day. Like, I need to go to places, come back to work, to go to home, so I took a lot of time. And especially both, because the unlock is free, so...
Okay, so you don't have to pay that, like, €1 unlock thing?
Yeah, to unlock you, we need to pay... I don't know the other ones, but this one is free, so I prefer this boat, yeah.
And do you find it safe? Do you feel okay, comfortable?
Yes, yes, because it's only 20 kilometers. I don't know it's my power, how it was, but you go in a short velocity, and yeah. The tires is good, you know. Yeah, the drive is good. We just need a helmet for the noobs and stuff, but yeah, it's safe.
Before the scooters arrived in Lisbon, uh-huh. What mode of transport did you use?
Subway.
Subway.
Yeah. I paid for the car, so I can't go to subway for anywhere. You know, I live here in a Green Line, so I can go anywhere with subway.
And do you find that this is better than the subway?
Yeah, of course. It's more quick. You know, I can go to the other ways. Ways that I know when I go to, on feet, you know, with scooters more fast, I can reach my home like in 5 minutes, while when I were with subway, it was 30, 25, yeah.
And do you think there are any problems with the e-scooters? Because I notice sometimes they are like just left on the pavement and things like that, and they block the sidewalks. Have you noticed that being a problem, and do you think it's got any better as they've stayed here?
Well, the recent problem that I found, I don't know is it a problem, but when I go to a lot, you know, for example, this way is like a climb, you know.
Yes,
and help. when I go faster than this, like he's 20,
it's limited, yeah.
Yeah, when I pass the limit, he's stuck. He's stuck, and I can't wait. I need to wait like 5 seconds, 10 until he unlock again, so I can ride normally. But this is the only problem that I found. Other this, no.
You think the parking is okay in the city? You don't think there are? Because I see a lot of them. We don't have them in England so much. We have some. They've just started.
Okay.
But people are very worried about them being left everywhere and parked everywhere.
Okay, okay.
Do you think that's a problem here?
No, here is not a problem because I see an app, and on the map of the app, they made an organization, you know, it's pretty well, and they don't let the scooters go to other places like Odivelas and stuff. And they are places that we don't have access with the scooters like there. is where is the white car. I can't go through there, so I can stop the ride. I need to come back here and stop here. Because my destiny is up there.
So before, you can't go up this way.
Yes. Previous month, we had the permission to go there. But nowadays, I don't know what happened. They blocked their
they
way.
They blocked this road?
Yes.
Maybe they had a complaint or something.
I don't know. But yeah, they blocked. And now we just, for the people who have to reach their place, yeah, we just need to let this.
Yeah.
But other race is cool.
Brilliant. Well, thank you for taking the time. Sorry to stop you in your day. No, all right, take care.
You too.
I'm going to go and try one out, stop talking, see what I think. Try and give you a little bit of commentary safely while I'm doing it. I'm just literally walking about 50 yards, which is great. It's super convenient. There are, you know, part of this is that there are e-scooters on most streets, whatever you think of that. There are a couple nicely parked here next to the moped parking. So it all seems to work. Here's the Link scooter, which is by Super Pedestrian. They've given me some credit to go and try it out. Because that's another thing. They, you know, these are good tools and they are quite fun. But whether they are cost effective enough to use over private scooters is another matter, but that to be honest, in a city like Lisbon is not the market for them, so just worth considering those. So this scooter is chunky, it's like a lime green with a grey, can't think of a better word than shaft for that, grey shaft, with real chunky handlebars. I'm told that this has a higher weight limit than most of the e-scooter companies, so don't tell anyone, but I'm over 100 kilos, so this is absolutely fine for me, according to the technical specs. So I'm going to open my app and scan the QR code. All familiar with that process nowadays, hiring things, scanning QR codes. There we go. So I've just scanned it. Accept. Payment. And there we go. It's unlocked. Ride safely. Okay, I will ride safely. I haven't eaten yet, so I'm going to go and do that. I'm flicking up the kickstand. And it says to basically kick it forward, push off like a kick scooter, like you did when you were a child. Which I'm going to do. I'm going to go around the curb first. And then press the button. Okay, there you go. Doing it. I'm e-scooting. Okay. It feels really stable. Genuinely, it's a lot better than my previous experiences. Brakes work as well. It's got two brakes even. Christ. Right. So, I'm going one way. And there's one way street. Quite like to get something to eat. So, let's see what I can find. Lots of really nice parklets in Lisbon. I think the city said there are over 300. All the restaurants are making the most of the extra space outdoors. As the chap was saying just in the interview, these streets I'm going along are really quite smooth, and he was saying that they're all 20 kilometres an hour. And in my experience, not everyone follows that, but I feel perfectly safe doing this, riding along. There are no motor vehicles at this time, just people walking. I'm pretty much the only person on the road, which probably is more down to how and where I am in town. Really, I just fancy a coffee. Maybe I can. Well, there's no shortage, actually. It's just choosing the best one. So I might have a little problem here. I've got to navigate this hill. Got some cars popped on the zebra crossing, so I can't really see. Okay, I'm going for it. Okay, I'm a heavy lad on an e-scooter. Okay, so I'm going. someone's left a bolt e-scooter just behind a parked car, that's not going to go down well, probably. And the streets are lovely. There's just so much parking everywhere. So much parking. Some of these cars look like they haven't moved for days. They've all got advertising signs in. There's another couple of scooters parked up there. And I've got to say, there's some mopeds as well just parked on the pavement, so should always put this into perspective. I think the challenge is getting people to abide to these parking zones, which is good on the app, but if you just want to stop somewhere, then, you know, it's not... Sometimes you just want to stop and, oh, I'm going to do now here, I'm going to go and stop and have a coffee, but I'm not going to check if there's a parking zone. Well, in fact, there's a scooter next to it in the parklet. So there's actually a kind of de facto scooter spot. It's not formal or anything, but it's just where the parklet's not be using the space. Seems pretty sensible. Right, so I'm going to finish my ride. Park mindfully, don't block walkways or ramps, leave transit stops clear, fair dues, end ride. Okay, it's asked me to take a photo. Very happy to oblige. Show that I've been sensible to avoid a fine. There we go. All done, that was pretty simple. Now for a coffee, and you're going to judge me, but I have no idea. Well, maybe it's cafe, I don't know what to say. It's the problem with English people, they make no effort to learn any languages. My wife's half Portuguese, should have made more of an effort before I got here. So let's do that. Could I have a cafe?
Okay.
And one of those, please. Obrigado. Lovely. I've got an espresso and these Portuguese tarts. And because we've €1.80, which is more than I paid yesterday, €1.65 in the other place, but can't complain, that's quite excellent. This is, I'm told, a proper Portuguese breakfast. Now, Lisbon is a city that's changing. I've never been here before, but my wife came here last 10 years ago, and I sense from what I've said and what the pictures have sent her that she'll sort of see some differences, I think. There was obviously the 2008 financial crisis that hit the capital hard, and there was high unemployment and infrastructure was down. But where I am, there's a lot of stuff being built. There's a lot of stuff happening, and having been at Velo City, there's a lot of great green and eco initiatives too. There's bike lanes, and they're not perfect. They're not extensive enough, like you could be say of any city, but they are doing stuff. In 2018, they won the European Commission's Green Capital Award. That gave them €350,000. The jury described them as an inspiring and role model for cities across the EU, demonstrating clearly that sustainability and economic growth go hand in hand. But sounds like a bit PR buff for me, but I would know. But listening to what the deputy mayor has said, he said previously that he wanted to return the city to the citizens. I was offered the opportunity to take action, to be part of a political project that has an impact on city life. And I sense that there is quite a lot of political will here. The cities have to pay to have Velo City, and they want the advocates here. They want to talk to them, and they want to show off what they're doing on a global landscape. E-scooters are part of the drive towards eco-friendly modes. The bike share scheme Jira is one that I've been using in the last couple of days. That's largely e-bikes, actually, but I ended up with a pedal bike yesterday because of the demand from 750 cycling folk going on a ride together. But it was fine. It was actually fine, although, you know, I would always take an e-bike if I can. The e-scooters are a part of the micro-mobility mix, as we would say. There are apparently over 12,000 of these in the city. And at the time that I can get the information for, they're operated by 9 different companies, which I've not actually seen evidence of that many. Obviously, I can't talk about the total numbers, but in terms of the brands involved, Link by Super Pedestrian is naturally one of the key ones. Bolt are also in the city, and they have a range of some bikes as well that I've noticed. Bird is another, and then the American giant Lime. So they're the kind of 4 key players, and I guess one of the downsides of this is that without the kind of, it doesn't seem like there's loads of regulation. I could be wrong, I don't know the local laws, but without regulation of who can be an e-scooter operator here, it seems like a race, right, to get the market share, to get the most amount of people using them. When Uber first started, Uber started cabs, they paid drivers £50 an hour just to be there because they needed to get the market share quickly. And it seems like the scooter equivalent of that is to get as many scooters into the city as possible and try and get people loyal to that particular brand. And we've seen that happen with dockless bikes in London. Doesn't always go that well, but this feels a little bit more useful than maybe the Ofos and the Mobikes when they came to London. These all look like they're well maintained. Looks like they're getting, you know, they're clearly used. I've seen people using them, so these are, I hope, solving a problem, and they're certainly appealing to younger people that maybe wouldn't engage with bikes. I was hoping when I spoke to the chap earlier that he'd say, oh well, I started to use this instead of a bike, and that would have given me something interesting to talk about. But it seems mainly that it's public transport that people are getting away from, which is a challenge for cities in themselves. We see in London that there's a fare shortage. Most of the mode shift towards cycling is coming from public transport, not from cars. So it's a challenge, and I have to say there's work to be done here. It's not perfect by any means, but things seem to work from what I've seen. Maybe that's because last year the city included fines for operators from between €60 and €300 for poor parking if they're obstructing the pavements, and they have a removal fee that has to be covered by the company. But that also, to be fair, extends to shared bicycles. And the police in Lisbon claim to have removed 1,800 poorly parked scooters between February and June in 2019, and charging fees of €17,000. So we're seeing a combination of parking bays, regulation, sensible parking. They're still new, they still stand out, they still look a bit odd in the streetscape. But, you know, I'm wedged in a parklet between 100 cars, and we've come to learn to live with that, rightly or wrongly. So I do feel like it's a case of the fact that they're new, and Lisbon just seems to be getting on with it, really, and using them, and probably making the city a little bit greener and cleaner at the same time.
Well, thank you for that, Adam. Lisbon is one of my favourite cities in the world, mainly not so much because of the e-scooters, more because of the fried fish that you can eat in Lisbon.
Yes.
And I'm a little bit disappointed that the fish never got a mention in your otherwise immaculate report, but we'll come to that in a minute. In the meantime, though, we have got a guest. Well, this episode, we're proud to say, is sponsored by Super Pedestrian, whose Link e-scooters feature in cities and towns across the world. And many of you will have seen them, I'm sure. Joining us from Super Pedestrian is a guest, Jean Andrews, who's head of policy for Ireland and the UK. Joining us all the way from Dublin, Jean, is that right?
Correct, yeah. Thanks very much for having me.
Thanks for joining us. Jean, I suppose, can I ask the stupid... my role in this podcast is to ask the stupid and obvious questions, and I'm very good at it. So I'll kick off and I'll just ask you, what is Super Pedestrian?
Great. No, happy to respond to all and any questions. So Super Pedestrian is where we operate in the shared mobility space. So we're a shared e-scooter operator, but we're not a traditional operator. We're actually originally an engineering company. We were spun out of MIT in 2013 and spent 8 years developing software technology that protects riders and pedestrians in micromobility vehicles. And then we spent a couple of years and $75 million developing this very smart and very safe e-scooter called Link, which I believe some of you may have had a chance to test out.
Yeah, I did. It was good. I've used a variety of e-scooters over the last couple of years, and some of the early private ones that I had a go on private land here in the UK were a little bit sketchy. They seemed like toys, effectively, and I think the first iterations were like toys with GPS trackers on. And we seem to have got to a place where the scooters, certainly a lot of the scooters that I've seen out and about, are a lot more fit for purpose, which I think were people's kind of initial concerns. So yeah, like I was, you know, I'm quite a largish chap, and sort of being on one of these Lynx scooters with the big tires with suspension, like it felt, you know, it felt robust. It felt like I was on a proper vehicle, rather than, you know, I guess what a lot of people who have not tried them before think of, you know, they think it might be some sort of like hoverboard that you get from Amazon. It might just set on fire at any point. And this definitely wasn't that. This is a proper vehicle, which is good.
That's good to hear. I think that the e-scooters have come a long way since the early days, and, you know, the kind of earlier models were maybe not as robust or fit for purpose, but, you know, I mentioned we kind of spent a lot of money in developing the scooter itself. And I think in the early days as well, there were a lot of issues associated with e-scooter use, and there are a lot of technological fixes now for some of those issues. They're not solved by any means, but there are, you know, you mentioned kind of the GPS and geofencing, etc., you know, and then the scooters themselves, just as you mentioned, ours is kind of, it is quite a big, robust piece of kit, and it does feel, I think you have to kind of ride it to see, it does feel quite safe, and there's a lot going on kind of that's invisible kind of underneath the scooter to make sure that that ride is safe for you, not just for you as the rider, but also for pedestrians.
So, Gene, just to clear up in my mind, geofencing is, I remember, Adam, when you tried a scooter in Coventry a couple of years ago, the geofencing wasn't ideal, was it? And
suboptimal.
It thought you were on the pavement, whereas actually, so it slowed you down automatically to kind of walking speed.
Yes.
In front of a bus. So geofencing is that thing, right, Gene, where it kind of, the scooter knows where you are and knows where you can be and how fast you can be traveling, etc. Is that right?
Exactly. So it relies on GPS positioning, which needs to be fairly accurate, and it enables, so this is where for shared e-scooters rather than private e-scooters, so we're talking about shared e-scooters here, where operators will, and almost all operators have geofencing technology in place at the moment with differing levels of accuracy. But it'll actually enable the company. So if a city says, so in Coventry, they say, we don't want you e-scooter riders to be able to ride down this pedestrianized street, then the operators will implement a geofence. So it'll be a map that's stored either in the cloud or on the scooter. Ours is stored on the scooter because we think, well, we know that that's quicker in terms of response time. So the geofence will kick in under a second. So you're riding towards this pedestrianized street. The scooter is recognizing that you're approaching the pedestrianized street. The geofence starts to kick in to slow down the scooter. Ideally, it doesn't let you get onto that pedestrianized street at all. But there can be a little bit of GPS lag, and that's why we store the geofence on the scooter itself. And that's not only, it can be implemented, that's a no-ride zone where you're not allowed to ride down a pedestrianized street, but there can also be slow-ride zones, for example, if there's an area of the city where there's a lot of pedestrians crossing the road, for example, in the city council wants scooters to go more slowly in that area, it's possible to, again, the geofence will recognize, okay, I'm on this street, the scooter will recognize, and then it'll slow down the speed. So the max speed limit will be lower than it usually is. So it's a pretty clever bit of technology, and it's kind of constantly getting more and more accurate. And as I mentioned, that's why we store the maps on the scooter itself. And we've also made an acquisition of a positioning technology company that enables us to make that GPS positioning even more accurate.
How much can you prevent the misbehavior of ultimately individual choice? I always find it perplexing that seemingly either we don't care as a society, or car manufacturers just sort of gave up. But, you know, ultimately we don't restrict speed or anything like that. So, you know, what's the limitations of, you know, having the smartest product in the land? But ultimately, when I was in Lisbon, it wasn't just Lynx scooters. There were other scooter brands parked in places that, you know, I felt weren't where they should be. I was in Paris yesterday and in the Louvre, and it was sort of totally, it was a day that the Louvre was closed, and it was just a nice pedestrian area. And there's just like a a Lime e-scooter in the corner, which would obviously, you know, you couldn't park it there without getting a fine. So people can still obviously go against the grain of every technology that you try and implement, I guess.
Absolutely. No, I mean, it has to be a blend of this technology that we've been talking about, but also rider education. I think rider education is absolutely key. And e-scooters are still relatively new, particularly in the UK. The trials haven't been around for that long. We've had private e-scooters around for the last few years, but it's still a relatively new mode. So I think both riders and pedestrians and other road users are still getting used to e-scooters and where they should be. And I think it probably doesn't help the fact that they're not legislated for yet in the UK. I think it's great that there's a trial, and it's brilliant to have had the opportunity during the pandemic, you know, while the roads were a little bit quieter, to introduce this new mode. That was actually a great thing to be able to do. And, you know, as traffic volumes have kind of increased, you know, then potentially there are some challenges. So I think the sooner that regulation can be introduced in the UK context, the better, to make sure that the schemes themselves, and, you know, that's shared e-scooter schemes, but also that the private e-scooters are regulated as well, so that there's a guide in terms of how people can ride the scooters. Because obviously at the moment there's a situation in the UK where there are the pilot schemes where e-scooters are temporarily legalized, but private e-scooters are currently not legal. But there's a little bit of an anomaly, and we still see a lot of people riding private e-scooters. So I think once there's certainty in terms of how to ride them, where to ride them, and all of that across the board, then that should make things a lot better. But you're absolutely right to point out that, you know, there is a duty by operators to educate riders. It's not just we're providing the technology and, you know, it can do certain things, but you have to have kind of buy-in from the public and from the riders, and you have to have like responsible kind of ridership. And, you know, that's, I think that's really important.
And it is a trial still in the UK, but there has been some data that's coming out, Jean, around the kind of trips that these e-scooters are replacing. And one argument for them, and I know that some, for example, the Centre for London recently said that they should be legalised because they have the potential to reduce car use. And last year, the Transport Committee came up with the same conclusion, legalise them because they help people get out the car. But there's also this element of replacing walking trips, which is maybe in terms of like public health and in terms of active travel, maybe something we don't want to do. So in Bristol, they found that 44% of e-scooter trips in the region replace walking trips. I think in America, it was around 27%. I don't know if this is something that you've noticed with your scheme, or if you've done any kind of surveys of your users, and whether this is something we should be worried about, and what you think the solutions might be.
Sure. Well, there's recent NABSTA data, the North American Bike Share and Scooter Share Association report from last year, that shows that 36% of shared mobility trips replace car journeys. You know, you're absolutely right to say that we shouldn't be trying to replace active travel journeys with e-scooter trips. There's lots of reasons why, from a public health perspective, not least that active travel journeys are really important for the population, so they should be encouraged. However, it's not always possible to walk everywhere all the time or to cycle everywhere all the time. And I think it is important, you know, we're in a climate emergency. We're looking to decarbonize transport. I think it's 25% of UK emissions are related to transport. There's a need for modal shift to get people out of, or give people a choice in terms of taking the car for those short journeys. So there's a kind of a sweet spot between, you know, not cannibalizing active travel journeys and then giving people an opportunity to take perhaps a lower carbon mode rather than taking the car for those shorter journeys. And obviously they're kind of associated co-benefits around, you know, easing congestion and improving air quality, etc. So I think it's really important for that operators are kind of aware. And you know, to be honest, it's usually a kind of a requirement of the city that where there's, you know, the city doesn't want active travel to be cannibalized by shared schemes. So that's something that the operators will usually have to demonstrate that they're not going to do. And there are different ways that we can do that, such as through pricing. You know, if you make it more expensive for people to do those shorter journeys, and you make it kind of, you know, a better value to do that kind of those mid-range journeys, so beyond, you know, 2 to 5 kilometers, and then more expensive again for the longer journey, so that public transport isn't being cannibalized. So it's about kind of supporting active travel and also integrating better with public transport, and maybe enabling more people to reach public transport without taking away from those walking and cycling journeys.
How important is for the growth across cities, across the world, actually, for the growth of your product, for want of a better word, how important in your mind is segregated infrastructure so that you're not sharing directly the same road space, you know, the same argument that cyclists have been kind of banging on about for years? How do you see that panning out? And do you think ultimately that actually the exponential growth potentially in the use of e-scooters will come to benefit cyclists as well, because the pressure to build segregated infrastructure might be brought to bear that much more keenly?
Great question. And yeah, I wholeheartedly agree. I'm a keen cyclist myself. I have an e-cargo bike and I take my kids around Dublin on it. And there's new, safer, segregated cycling infrastructure local to me here. And it's absolutely game changing. I've lived in the Netherlands as well, and where the gold standard is safe, segregated cycling infrastructure. And it completely changes how people move around a city. It completely changes who will actually choose to get on a bike or get on a scooter, because it's a much broader demographic. Once you have that safe cycling infrastructure, there's a lot of evidence to support there are more women and there are more older people, for example, who are taking up these different and active travel modes. So I think that it should be the same infrastructure that e-scooters are using, as well as bikes and e-bikes and e-cargo. And, you know, there's kind of a bit of a micro-mobility revolution going on at the moment, which is necessary, because we mentioned we do need to decarbonize transport. We do need to get people out of ICE vehicles for those short journeys where possible, and give a choice. And safe cycling infrastructure is absolutely a huge part of that. And as you already mentioned, like, the more demand that we can show for that, the more people that begin to use that, you know, it kind of creates this positive reinforcement where the cities maybe are more likely to invest in it. And you know, they're already incentivized to invest in it anyway because of climate action targets and, you know, trying to. And we also have this congestion problem in our cities. It's only going to grow. Populations are getting bigger, you know, and becoming more urbanized. I think 75% of the world's population will be living in cities by 2050. You know, all of those people can't just get a car, even if it's an EV. With that zero emission, they're just going to join the traffic jam. And, you know, that's that doesn't solve the congestion issue. So we definitely absolutely need better investment in cycling infrastructure to enable this modal shift, and, you know, have not just e-scooters, but e-bikes and all of that good stuff to be for the demand for that to be satisfied and to be able to satisfy those targets I mentioned.
I agree with, I obviously really agree with the congestion and the space part. E-scooters are light vehicles, and that makes total sense. I also agree with the sense of e-scooters and decarbonisation, but potentially more from a, it's hard to say in the UK because there isn't, you know, they're not legal, but, you know, from a private e-scooter point of view, that makes, you know, that makes quite a lot of sense in terms of having, you know, an individual personal vehicle, which you're more inclined to use because it's cheaper, it's, you know, it's cost effective, you own it, etc. There's no public data on it, but, you know, I was told by people close to one of the schemes near me that some of their rental e-scooters only have a shelf life of 3 or 4 months at times because of the kind of, not so much vandalism, but just wear and tear and general, maybe petty vandalism and people not looking after these things. That doesn't sound very sustainable to me. I appreciate they're a lot lighter than cars, but ultimately cars do have a benefit of lasting decades often. So there's that I'm interested to get your thoughts on. And then just on the business model as well, one of the things I have concerns about from a environmental point of view is that a lot of the companies that are backed by venture capital funds, they at the moment it's a race to kind of try and be the next, you know, when Uber first started in cars in cities, they were paying drivers £50 an hour just to be there because they needed to get the market share. And now it's about getting market share. So we saw with other companies like Bikeshare, they're just littering the streets with more bikes than are needed because they want them on, you know, never to be more than 5 meters from a shared bike or whatever, which isn't sustainable. So what's the answer to that to those kind of difficult questions, I think, that are people are thinking about right now?
Well, you're absolutely right to point out the issue around vehicle lifespan. I think that is an issue that the shared e-scooter industry as a whole needs to address. I think there's the University of Warwick had evidence that the average lifespan is something like 3 months, which is obviously horrendous from an environmental perspective. You know, for our own part at Super Pedestrian, we do design and manufacture the scooters ourselves. So that enables us, and we've spent a lot of time and a lot of money in making sure that they are kind of resilient, sort of safe, stable, and longer lasting. We have the longest lasting battery in the market, and scooter itself. In fact, the battery actually lasts for two scooters, and the scooter itself lasts for more like 5 years, depending on the use case as well. You're right to point out that, you know, shared scooters are designed to be on the streets, and, you know, if they're used very heavily, obviously the wear and tear, they'll kind of be issues with them sooner than there will be one that's scooters that are not used that often, like private scooters, for example. But, you know, in terms of, you know, we've done quite a lot to sort of address that in terms of our own vehicle, but it's certainly an industry-wide issue. You know, I think a lot more does need to be done to make sure that scooters are more resilient and they last longer. And also that, you know, there have been issues in the industry around, you know, e-scooters being vandalized, you mentioned, and maybe thrown in the water. You know, I think as an, and again, from the industry as a whole, there needs to be a response that takes this seriously and, you know, retrieves scooters that would have been thrown away and, you know, ideally puts them back on the streets and fixes them up so that there's not this waste. And, you know, because obviously there's a lot of embedded emissions associated with manufacture of the e-scooters. So the longer they last, the better. So that's something that we've really been focusing on in sort of the design of our vehicles themselves. And to your other point around the business model, yeah, we've seen, so there's this huge kind of investment in the shared mobility industry in general and shared e-scooters in particular, with some enormous companies and, you know, huge funding rounds. And there is a lot of kind of pressure to grow and have this sort of aggressive growth model. And as a result, I think we've seen, you know, in certain cities, for example, in Germany, an operator, I think, dropped 3,000 scooters overnight on the streets. And, you know, it's quite an aggressive deployment model. And it also, there are quite a lot of issues that might be associated with, you know, those scooters suddenly being on the streets overnight in terms of, you know, parking and people not being used to them. So, you know, our preferred approach is to do things kind of more gradually, to work with the city. And always there used to be, and less so now, but it still happens, where operators will launch without a permit as well. So they'll drop a load of scooters on the street overnight again and start operating a scheme without having permission by the city. You know, we've never done that. We don't do that. And we would always, you know, we believe that it's really important to engage with the city, find out, you know, every city is different. There's a local context. The streets are different. The demand case is different. You know, you have to engage with the city and figure out, you know, what's needed when, and also then make tweak the scheme. So, you know, the initial deployment, you might, you know, we would get data then once there a certain number of scooters are deployed, and maybe slightly adjust in terms of where the scooters are deployed based on the demand in that particular city, because every city is different. So it's really, really important to do it more gradually. So for that reason, I think, yeah, just dropping a load of scooters overnight onto the streets just doesn't work. I think for riders, it doesn't work. For pedestrians, it doesn't work. For the city. But there is a kind of probably a lot of pressure from investors for some of those bigger companies, and maybe explains why there is that more kind of aggressive deployment model. We also see it with pricing. In certain places, there's some very, very aggressive pricing by operators that's just not commercially viable in the longer term. But there's definitely a kind of an approach in terms of undercutting the market. And, you know, we don't think that that's necessarily a good way of operating either, because the scheme needs to stand up by itself. You know, when we launch in a city, we want to be there for the long haul. You know, we want to employ local workers, and we don't use gig workers. We'll have local full-time workers, and we want to ensure that we remain there rather than kind of spending aggressively and, you know, this just not being a viable commercial opportunity. So I think that's certainly an industry.
Are they are companies still doing that? Because I remember at the beginning, it was really like the Wild West, wasn't it? You would just get these companies sort of appearing overnight and then just throwing these e-scooters out on the streets, and then the cities were having to react, and there was no kind of legislative framework. There was no means of dealing with it because it was such a new technology. This is back in 2017, I guess. Is it still happening now?
I think it's happening less and less, but it does still happen. So, for example, in Malaga, we launched in Malaga recently, and we were the only operator with a permit there. So we had kind of requirements of our permit around mandatory parking zones and no ride zones and all of that, which we implemented. And as a result, when we launched, nobody was really using our scooters because with the other scooters that were there without a permit, riders could do what they wanted. So there was sort of a preference towards being less regulated and less controlled. And as a result, the city kind of then has started kicking out some of the operators, and then the operators have to apply for the permit and have to introduce these requirements. So it does still happen, but I think cities are much more wise to it now. And obviously it's not desirable for the city. It's not to have an unregulated scheme operating. And we just don't think that it's beneficial for kind of the longer term for the company either. I think it's good to have a good relationship with the city so that there's this kind of symbiosis in terms of what the city needs and, you know, what the operator can deliver, and the two can work together.
Yeah, I think one of the things that cities came up with as a kind of lever was to basically say, if you're going to operate here, then have a policy that where you operate in less well-served neighbourhoods for public transport, or managing pricing and managing numbers. And so I think a lot of cities around the world have kind of gotten wise to this. I always find it interesting that although obviously safety has to be the number one concern for any kind of transportation model, there's a real double standard, isn't there? Because we've talked about managing speeds in pedestrian areas or areas where there's lots of people crossing the road. We've talked about carbon footprint of these vehicles. We've talked about the impacts on exercise and risks to other road users, things that we don't really talk about for motor vehicles. So I always find it interesting there's a very high bar that needs to be met by this new technology. And I think, like Adam said, it's the fact that we are kind of scared of what's new sometimes and would rather just stick with what we know. But there is, of course, the kind of issue of people always raise when we're talking about e-scooters is the dangers of people riding on pavements, putting other pedestrians at risk, putting other road users at risk. People talk about them being dangerous. And the latest gov.uk, the government stats on road collisions, I think there were 460 collisions involving e-scooters. And this is all e-scooters. So they don't distinguish between like private and hire scooters, because of course people are using them illegally on the roads. You see them everywhere. And and one person was killed last year on an e-scooter. One thing I found quite interesting was a lot of these users were young and overwhelmingly male. So I think of the 484 casualties, there were 118 were aged 10 to 19. So either kids are using them presumably, or parents with kids. I see some like parents with like a child on the front hanging on, and they're like whizzing down the street, which is kind of, it looks kind of fun, but also a little bit scary. And also I noticed that the government stats showed spikes of collisions at like 3 and 5, which made me think like kids using them on the way home from school, and like, how do we kind of improve safety? I know you talked about your e-scooters have improved, and I think wheel size is one thing, but obviously there is a safety issue. People are concerned. Yeah, just wondering what your thoughts are on that.
Sure. Thanks for bringing up the recent research from the DfT. I think, you know, of course, look, every collision, every incident is, you know, absolutely regrettable and shouldn't happen. And the industry as a whole, in terms of shared e-scooter use, we need to do as much as we possibly can to minimise those to every extent that we can. It's worth referencing that those figures you've already mentioned are a mix of private and shared e-scooters. So the shared schemes launched in July of last year. I think the figures are from 2020. So there's probably, and then we also know that I think Halfords in October of last year noted a 450% increase in sales of private e-scooters. So quite a lot of those figures are probably to do with private e-scooter use. You mentioned the age range there. Usually the shared schemes are at least 16 plus. Ours are 18 plus. So you can't rent one of our scooters if you're under 18. And that's just a decision that we've taken internally. And, you know, I think, you know, I mentioned before that, you know, rider education is absolutely key in terms of, you know, this being more of a new mode. And often we're actually seeing from some of the places that we're in, you know, 50 cities across 8 countries around the world. And we do a lot of in-person events and training when we launch in a city. And what we've seen from that is that a lot of the people who are taking up e-scooters haven't even ridden a bike before. So for whatever reason, they didn't feel comfortable on a bike, but they do feel comfortable on an e-scooter. But as a result, and they're not necessarily drivers either. So they don't have that road awareness kind of already built in, just because they haven't had that experience before. So there is kind of a huge piece around education and, you know, how do you safely operate an e-scooter? Where should you even be on the road? And as I mentioned before, in the absence of guidance from the government, you know, in the UK context, I think that makes that just much more challenging for riders.
Well, listen, it's incredibly obvious to me that one way or another, e-scooters are here to stay, and that there's going to be huge benefits as well as kind of complications along the way. And it's been really interesting to get your thoughts. I've been very, I've learned an awful lot, actually. So thank you very much, Jean. Say hello to Dublin.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah. Thank you very much for sponsoring the podcast as well. It's the first time that's ever happened. Feels very grown up. Feels very almost like, welcome. You know.
It's a great podcast. I've really been enjoying listening.
No, it's been been really interesting chat. Thanks ever so much, Jean. And we'll see you again soon.
Thanks very much. Take care.
Well, that was good. And in particular, I thought that Jean dealt very well with the fact that you two were so aggressive towards her. No, you weren't.
Were we?
But you did. You were basically asking her some quite difficult questions there, I thought.
I couldn't see anyone's faces this week, so I'm not sure if she looked shocked or appalled when I was asking her.
She was appalled. She looked really upset.
No, she took it in her stride and she dealt with your questions. To your satisfaction or not? Or are there still outstanding issues in your mind? Or what do you feel?
Yeah, I think so. And I think she made some good points around safety, because that's always the thing that comes up. I mean, there was a piece the other day, you know, when you're somewhere and the TV's on silent in the background, and they had this piece on the morning news about, obviously about e-scooters, and they had police literally running after e-scooter users and like grabbing them. Or like trying to stop them in the street. It was obviously about misbehavior, but it does seem to dominate debate. But I think she made a good point about just rider education, especially if it's younger users. A lot of young people don't have driving license anymore and don't cycle and don't really know how to use the roads. And so naturally they'd be on the pavements because that's where they're used to being. And so, yeah, I think it's credible that education could do a lot, and obviously infrastructure as well.
Adam?
Yeah, I thought it was great. I think there's a general consensus, isn't there, that e-scooters are here to stay, like you mentioned, Ed. And I think that we should be sensible and pragmatic. We should have the conversations that we need to have around the lifespan of the vehicles. I think, you know,
I thought it was really interesting. I had no idea that there were some versions,
it's surprising,
some varieties that just get thrown in the bin after 3 months. That's amazing.
Yeah, it's really surprising. Yeah. And it's worrying, and I think you have to be concerned about any private organization taking on, you know, responsibility of the state in some aspects, in instances, depending on, you know, what you believe, but which is transport, you know, when transport in cities is typically, you know, managed by governments. So when you start to outsource that through bike share or through e-scooter share, and obviously bus privatization, all these things, you know, there needs to be really kind of careful consideration into the longevity of it, and not you know, not just putting profits first. My worry, I guess, is that in the UK at least, that we might, I hope not, but you know, we might legislate these things out of existence by making private e-scooters even more attractive without legislation, because you know the speeds are dropping, and you know, so in some cases you'll be only able to do 8 miles an hour. In London you can only do 12 and a half miles an hour, which is 3 miles, 3 miles an hour less than, you know, an e-bike would be able to do under the sort of similar legislation. And every time the manufacturers or companies are asked by cities, they're having to just sort of jump, you know, how high do you want me to jump? Like, what one of the things was putting noises on the e-scooters so that they're not too silence, taking them out of operation at night time, all of these things like that cities are asking scooter companies to do, and scooter companies don't really have a choice other than to comply. So the risk is that e-scooters become that inconvenient, that slow, and so expensive in the private, in a rental sense, that actually people just stick to what they were doing before.
I don't have anything against the noise per se, because if you're blind or visually impaired, then you're not going to hear them, you're not going to see them coming. So, and I think a lot of e-cars are now having sounds added, aren't they? But yeah, certainly speeds and excessive kind of legislation elsewhere. But it is amazing that we don't do the same for cars, but of course we're used to cars. So it does boil down to this thing of it being something new and scary.
Yeah, yeah, I was thinking exactly that when Jean was talking. I think it was the first question she answered about geofencing.
Yeah.
You know, I thought, why aren't we doing that with cars? I mean, yeah,
they've even got AI now. They can tell if you're riding on a pavement. They're looking into like AI, and I just thought, wow, this pavement parking where I live is absolutely rife. And I just thought, wow, they could introduce that to cars as well and solve us a lot of problems. Yeah.
Anyway, I suppose that's a slightly different issue, isn't it? But Adam, if they make it harder and harder and less desirable for the rental companies to operate effectively, and that they make the product less desirable for the consumer, I suppose, for want of a better word, isn't that just going to mean that more and more people will buy private e-scooters? Because I think the demand for e-scooters is there, isn't it? And so that actually is almost the more important kind of piece of the jigsaw. What are we going to do with private e-scooters that, as you rightly say, are just being used illegally en masse at the moment? You know, where are we heading with that? Are they going to, is any legislation imminent, or what's the story?
I think the general feeling is that they should be. I mean, as I said, with Jean, the Transport Committee is recommending e-scooters be legalised. Centre for London recently recommended the same. They said the shift is already happening, like you said, Ned, and it's just... we kind of need the policies to encourage safe ridership on the street, whatever policies they may be. But I think that in terms of carbon emissions, there's a big incentive because they produce something like between 34 and 90% fewer carbon emissions than private cars. It's obviously a huge difference in numbers there. But without the harmful pollutants. And they said a massive two-thirds of car journeys could be made by e-scooter or e-bike in under 20 minutes. So, yeah, huge potential.
All right. Well, very interesting and nice to have an expert as well on our podcast.
Yes.
When are we going to meet again? We haven't really decided, have we? Sometime soon, though?
Yeah, soon. Let's do soon.
Yeah, we'll do another one. We'll do... I did an interview when I was in Velocity with one of the top bods at the European Commission. So we should have a chat about that for our next episode.
Yeah.
Just like a little
humble
brag there.
And I did the one about the bike hub, which was really nice, actually, and talks about, getting women from ethnic minority groups into cycling and, like, the importance of behaviour change and kind of what we might call softer measures and how important they are. We've got two options.
Brilliant.
There we go.
Brilliant. That's super exciting.
Yeah.
Keep looking in the future if you're listening. New episodes, and hit subscribe as well, because that helps us, and you'll get new ones, and
you can see me and Laura live on a panel, can't you, Laura?
Yeah.
At the Ruler Classic on, I think it's on the Saturday. If you're in London, come along, and we're on a panel discussing the joys of riding a bike in London.
Yay.
Aren't we? I think that's roughly it. Sounds
nice.
Good. But in the meantime, though, do continue to subscribe, as Adam says, and listen and rate and review and all the nice things that you do. You can find us at Pod Streets Ahead and all the usual blurb, which hasn't been written down in the script, so I can't remember verbatim here. But there are, I shall just sign off in an ad libby fashion and say, from me, Ned Baltic, it's goodbye.
Goodbye.
From me, Adam Tranter, it's goodbye.
And now you can go, Laura, now you can do your goodbye
bit. And from me, Laura Laker, it's goodbye.
Very smooth. We'll see you next time.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.